Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another exciting episode of Well Armed Radio. I guess you'll be the judge if it was exciting or not. Welcome to another episode of Well Armed Radio. I always wonder how long to leave that intro running for. It's a great song. The little Top Gun theme song. One of my all-time favorite movies. I missed that one when it came out on a few months back. They had it out on IMAX with in 3D, a special release. I think it was only for one weekend, but was busy that week. I didn't get to see it, but love that movie. One of the greatest movies of all time, in my humble opinion. I've been told otherwise by people more versed in movies than myself. But Well Armed Radio, my name is Nick Clark, host of Well Armed Radio, chairman, president of Wisconsin Carry. This is getting into our second month here of broadcast. Hope that you're finding the show exciting. I hope that we've got the technical issues worked out. Did a lot of time during the week doing some test episodes and making sure. I've had some audio issues week over week, and I'm frustrated that might affect people's attention span for the show. If it gets a little bit irritating, there's audio issues during the during the broadcast. I was listening back to the podcast myself, which is where the majority of our our listenership is. We've got a good number of live listeners, but a huge number of listeners that listen throughout the week to the archived podcast. So for those of you who listen to this later in the week, thanks for tuning in to the podcast. Definitely invite you to tune in live. Like to get some more audience participation. Again, I see the numbers. I know we have a good number of people that do listen live, but have a lot of live call-in. But hoping to change that today. We're going to do open line. So I was a little nervous preparing for the show today in that. Obviously, with a large number of callers, I don't know if this is the lazy man's way to broadcast a talk show, is to have open line where you have people call in and pick the topics, or if that's the challenging way, because then you have to really think on your feet with whatever people come up with. But so I prepared some topics today, but I do want to every week I wanted to leave some time at the beginning of the show for people who tuned in via the podcast to call in and talk about any of the things that we talked about the prior week, people who didn't listen live, if they wanted to jump in. So we'll definitely open that up right now if anybody would like to call in for anything we covered last week. Last week we talked about the lawsuit that Wisconsin Carry, filed against the Department of Justice. Talked about a few other topics. I don't actually have my notes in front of me. But obviously then today, being an open line show, anything you'd like to talk about, I'd like to talk about. So keep it relatively, it doesn't even have to be gun related. If it's freedom related, we'll call it fair game. So obviously freedom and guns are in the same realm. But So the number to call into the show is 646-716-8739. Again, that number is 646-716-8739. So more than welcome to call in. And Dan is our call screener. Dan is sitting in the screening room right now, ready to take your calls and put you on the air. So hope that you all had a good weekend. This is Sunday nights always used to be a real downer time for me, obviously, getting ready for the work week and the fun of the weekend passing by. But lately I've been so busy that Sunday nights just seem to flow right into the rest of everything that's going on. I've actually been finishing up a theater room in my basement. I've got been working on it for a couple years, doing all the work myself, most of the work myself. I'd say about 95% of the work I've done myself, but I put a bedroom down. I have a three-story rear exposure for my home, and so the lower level walkout basement has, you know, patio door and six windows along the back, and I wanted to build that out into a theater room, put a bedroom down there, a big huge theater room with raised seating. I mean, I went all out in this thing with this theater room, and then a huge bathroom down there. So getting that all finished up, I had the majority, the bulk of the work done, and then it's all these little things that you have left to do. I've got the bar down there, and then I've got but I had the cabinets and the countertops, and then the faucet was on, but it wasn't hooked up, and now I've got my faucet hooked up, so I've got running water at the bar. So I guess technically now it's a wet bar. I've got the drain hooked up. Today my big thing was I've had a refrigerator down there that I had put in, but I didn't have the ice maker run yet. So now I've got my line run for the ice maker. So we've got ice, and of course then it takes a while for it to start making ice. And then I was wondering, is this thing working or not? But about 20 minutes before the show, I heard some noise in the basement. I went down there, and sure enough, ice falling out of the ice maker. So I'm a happy guy. But good weekend. There have been some storms around the state. I know I think the Bosque Belt area had flooding this weekend. 8 inches of rain, I guess, on Friday night. So to any of our listeners, we have listeners all across the state. Any of our listeners in the Bosque Belt area, hope you made it through the weather okay. I know there's some flood warnings out for some locations here around Wisconsin. But I managed to dodge the rain myself. We spend the spring boating on Lake Michigan, and then come summer when it's warm enough to swim, we head inland. So first weekend, this past weekend, we headed to inland lakes, and I had a good time. I think the overcast skies scare a lot of people away, so there wasn't a big wait for the boat launches, got right on the water, and I had a good time out there. Sun popped out for a little while, and the water temperature wasn't bad. I think the lake we were on was about 72.5 degrees, 73 by the time we got off. It warmed up a little bit over the course of the afternoon. So good times. I don't know if anybody made it up to the Sturgeon Bay Boat Show, which was this weekend, went on. I think it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, up at Skipper Bud's Marina. The marina they have right by the bay. I'm going to get the name of the bridge wrong. Big steel bridge, big landmark in Sturgeon Bay. If you're heading west from Sturgeon Bay, out into Sturgeon Bay from the city, you'll last bridge you pass under is a big steel bridge before you get out into Sturgeon Bay and then out onto Green Bay, which coincidentally is where I'll be next weekend. So we will not have a broadcast next weekend. Next weekend, Well-Armed Radio will be taking the weekend off. I'll be up in Door County doing some recreation. Went up there last year, and great time. I mean, I'm certain people around the state, you know, some of you have vacationed in Door County, and great place. I mean, for me, any place I go on vacation, some place to boat is a requisite. So Door County is an ideal location for that. Last year, we stayed in Sturgeon Bay, stayed at the Bridgeport Resort. Really nice resort. If you ever go up to the Sturgeon Bay area, highly recommend the Bridgeport Resort, especially for kids. They got a game room, an indoor swimming pool with a little water slide area. Not a huge one, nothing like you'd see in the Dells, but then there's an outdoor pool and a lot of stuff to do, a lot of stuff for the kids to do, game room. But this year, we wanted to be a little bit farther north, so we're going to be up closer to. Last year, we took the boat and headed all the way up Green Bay. It took about 45 minutes by water to get up to Peninsula State Park, Nicolet Bay. Ran into a Wisconsin Carry member there last year who maybe tuned in tonight. Rick Berry was up there with his boat. So, Rick, maybe we'll see you again next weekend. With that said, if anybody here is in the Door County Peninsula State Park area, I extend an open invitation to come out on the, there's a beach at Peninsula State Park, and Nicolet Bay is the body of water that adjoins that beach, and it's a place where a lot of boats anchor and hang out, and I think later in the summer it gets pretty packed, but I think this time of year it's not too bad. So we were up there last year, and so if you're in the Peninsula State Park area next weekend and you walk down by the beach and you look out on the bay, if you see a boat with a huge Gadsden flag, and I'm talking huge, this thing, you won't miss it. So if you're in the area and you see that boat with that flag, you walk on out and join me for a drink. I'll be there with the family, but always got time to have a drink with a fellow Right to Carry supporter. Of course, I caution you, guns and water don't mix, so be careful not to dip your sidearm if you wade out. There's a shallow area, so there's the beach area where people swim, people that camp at Peninsula State Park swim, and then there's the it gets a little bit deeper, but probably just hip high waist high depending on how tall you are. And then there's a bunch of boats that are all anchored out there. So you see one with a Gadsden flag, and I mean a big Gadsden flag, that's me. So that'll be where I'll be next weekend, and we won't have a show next Sunday. We will be off the air. So with that, we'll jump into our topics of the week. And again, we're doing an open line today, so anybody that likes to call in and has a subject they'd like to talk about, gun-related or freedom-related, we'll take it. We'll talk about it. I have some things on the menu for today. Start off with some news, and the first news that I had for this week was something I found earlier in the week. And as many of you may know, Illinois passed a concealed carry law finally a few weeks ago. That was prompted by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which I believe back in December said to Illinois, you basically can't just blanket ban concealed carry. That's unconstitutional. So they gave Illinois, the court gave Illinois 180 days to implement a concealed carry law. Now, the interesting thing here is there are other states that there's two kinds of concealed carry. Well, there's two kinds of concealed carry laws. There's the shallow, well, three really. There's constitutional carry, which we all know about, which is where, Arizona, Vermont, Alaska, Wyoming, you do not have to have a permit in order to carry. If you're legally allowed to own a gun, you're legally allowed to carry that gun. No government training mandates, no license requirements, no permit taxes. That's type one. That's obviously the preferred scenario that we support, Wisconsin Carry supports. And obviously that I support personally, many of our members support. Some of our members don't. We do have members who are anti-constitutional carry. They think that it's okay to force people to get a permit and infringe upon that right. Obviously, I disagree. I think those are the Second Amendment hypocrites that we talked about in a show a few weeks ago. But second to that is shall issue. Shall issue is basically where if you do jump through the hoops that the state sets up, which could be background check, some states fingerprints, some states training requirement, the state must issue you a permit. So there's no discretion by the state. There's no discretion by a local sheriff. If you do these things, you're allowed, they must issue you a permit. And that's called shall issue. And then there's the may issue states. May issue states are states like New York, California. Those are states where Hawaii, I believe, is a may issue state. May issue pretty much means if you know somebody or you can really please the king, so to speak, and in this case, in some cases, the king is your local sheriff or some member of government who really gets to decide at their discretion who deserves a concealed carry permit and who doesn't. This is how, the Rosie O'Donnells of the world get their bodyguards to have concealed carry, the ability to conceal carry. Now, certainly some of those glitterati hire off-duty police officers who don't have to have a permit. They don't need a state-issued permit. They're role, their title as a police officer gives them the ability and the right to carry, right, gives them the privilege to carry concealed. But these states like New York and California, they do issue concealed carry permits. They just do it on a may issue basis. You come to us, you ask for permission. We'll review your case on a quote case-by-case basis and decide if you should or shouldn't. So when you hear the statistic that 49 states allow concealed carry, that's a bit misleading because there are those few states. I want to say it's more like 44 or 46 states. I forget the number. 44 or 46 states that have the shall issue type system where pretty much anybody who's a law-abiding citizen, doesn't have a criminal record, can get a permit. And then there's the may issue states, which again are the Californias, the New Yorks, and a few others. And now, so that's interesting how, you know, you might have thought that Illinois was going to become, you know, once the court says, hey, you have to, you know, allow some form of carry, it would be surprising to see that Illinois wouldn't just become a may issue state instead of a shall issue state. But the interesting thing here is when they give the state 180 days to pass a law, that requirement to pass a law and that 180 days really flipped the paradigm, so to speak, so that now something had to be passed. And it's true that Illinois couldn't get a shall issue permit system passed before this, but they also couldn't get a may issue permit system passed either. So now they were left with the fact that they had to pass something, and they couldn't pass. And we had Valinda Rowe, spokesperson for Illinois Carry, on a few weeks ago, and she talked about the law that they passed and some of the details. But with Illinois now, they were forced, they had to pass something. And give the folks a bit of an angle, and is the reason why Illinois, the legislation that was passed by the legislature, not yet signed by the governor, but passed by the legislature, that's the reason why it was shall issue, because they didn't have what they needed to get may issue through or shall issue, but now that they had to do something, it gave the pro-gun folks, it actually strengthened their position, and they could have just said no to everything, which would have really thrown Illinois into a upheaval. And because Illinois had to pass something, they ended up with shall issue instead of may issue. And it's all due to that looming deadline from the Seventh Circuit, which brings us to where we are today. And the legislature passed a shall issue concealed carry bill a few weeks ago. And there was an interesting article, I've been following this, because the Attorney General from Illinois requested a stay, an extension, and received it a few weeks back. So and this article that came out last week was titled Hold Your Holsters, Illinois Concealed Carry Not Likely Until 2014. But this was published last week. But this article from Benjamin Yount from the Illinois Watchdog says, just because Illinois lawmakers approved concealed carry legislation last month, don't expect residents to legally carry a gun anytime soon. The article repeats the byline here. In fact, it may be next year. Well, that was fun. I think I just got bumped there. I'm going to bring my call screener Dan on here for a second and make sure that we've got everything live. But Dan, are you? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. You're back online.
Yeah, I got bumped there for a second. So apologize to the audience there. How's the audio, Dan? Is everything coming through clear?
Yeah, everything sounds crystal clear. You just had that obvious little glitch where you got bumped offline for some reason.
Yeah. Well, we'll blame the internet for that one. It was Al Gore's fault.
Are you getting
storms off by you? What's that?
Are you getting any storms off by you right now? Maybe that's interfering with you a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's clear here, so we'll hope for the best. Hopefully we don't get kicked off again. But all right, Dan, we'll throw you back in the screening room. Thanks.
Okay, great.
Sorry about that technical glitch there. I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden I get a beep in my ear that I lost my internet feed. So we'll trudge away. So back to where I was. It may be next year before Illinois governors can put a foot on their hip, and this is the story from Benjamin Yount from Illinois Watchdog. It all depends on what Governor Paquin does, said Tom Vandermeer, an NRA lobbyist who has waited years for Illinois to finally allow law-abiding citizens the right to carry a firearm. So Illinois Governor Paquin could sign the legislation. He could veto it, or he could amendatory veto it. If the governor signs the legislation, the Illinois State Police would then have 180 days to set up a system to allow concealed carry. Legal gun owners could be carrying a pistol by January 2014, but it could be spring or even summer before gun owners could carry in Illinois. If the governor vetoes the proposal or changes the legislation with an amendatory veto power allows the governor to add or subtract pieces of the legislation as he sees fit. Around the Illinois Capitol, amendatory vetoes are often called rewrites to do right. Quinn has used that power in legislation dealing with guns in the past. State lawmakers would have to override the governor's veto, but the legislature is not scheduled to be back for the fall veto session until late October. A federal court has extended Illinois' deadline for concealed carry until July 9th. The state had been working under a June 9th deadline. Plenty of confusion what would happen if Quinn changes the legislation or asks lawmakers to add new provisions, and if the state misses the July 9th deadline. According to Representative Brandon Phelps from Harrisburg, no one knows what will happen. There's just so much uncertainty about what happens after July 9th. Phelps said the governor does nothing. Gun owners may be able to carry a gun starting July 10th, but it's unclear what will occur if Quinn changes the legislation with an amendatory veto. Quinn spokesperson Brooke Anderson is still holding out hope. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan could appeal the original court ruling that struck down Illinois' concealed carry ban and forced the legislature's hand. Madigan has until June 24th to appeal, and actually I think that's tomorrow. So gun owners are still, we'll find out tomorrow what happens there. But, you know, Illinois continues to be a mess. When this legislation passed, a lot of us wondered, suspected, worried that this wasn't going to be the end of it, and that Chicago politics was going to take hold down there in the Windy City, and it appears that's kind of what's happening here. So this is going to be, I say this with sympathy for our friends in Illinois, but this is going to be fun to watch because Illinois, I mean, it's just a mess when it comes to anti-gun legislators down there and their political machine. So who knows what's going to happen, but for those of you who are waiting to be able to cross the border and not have to unload your gun anytime soon, it looks like you're going to have to keep waiting because a lot of wranglings continue to go on down there. Next topic I had up for talk this week was news of the week, more news of the week, George Zimmerman trial. I'm going to take a second for some water here. That's my awkward Marco Rubio water moment. Usually I run a quick commercial during that time, but we'll get right to it here. News of the week, George Zimmerman trial. So the jury has been picked. six women are on the jury. So George Zimmerman's jury in Florida, there is a 12-person requirement for a case that involves the death penalty, a capital offense, but for a case that does not involve a death penalty, it's only a 6-person requirement. So we have a jury with five white women and one Hispanic woman. Zimmerman himself classifies himself as Hispanic. So that'll be interesting to see what comes of that. I'll save any jokes about never being able to predict a woman's behavior, but you know, six women, you can see, I mean, obviously sympathy. I think whoever can become the most sympathetic person here, you know, it's hard to, you know, legal experts have said for years that if when, you know, the day they learn how to predict a jury, you know, is the day that they, you know, that the world ends, because it's very, very difficult to do. But it'll be interesting to see how this composition, this jury composition, will obviously both sides, the prosecution, the state, and the defense, you know, had to wade through and make their strikes and ended up with this in the jury. So it'll be interesting how this this jury composition, what this results in. But the jury has been sequestered, so I think, unfortunately for those people, the case is going to last several weeks. They'll be sequestered over the holidays, and been a lot of talk about that. But the trial does start Monday with opening statements on Monday morning, I believe. So I think this will be a topic we'll probably be covering a great deal in the next few weeks as the trial starts, trial starting Monday. So, you know, feel free, again, open line today if you want to call in. The George Zimmerman trial is obviously front and center here now next week. If your thoughts, you know, guilty, innocent, there's even been some disconnect in the gun rights crowd. There was some people who are gun rights supporters who think that you know, George Zimmerman was wrong in what he did. There's people who think that he was right in what he did. It's, you know, I listen to a lot of Milwaukee talk radio and even the local talk radio hosts. And some of them, I think, might have started to change their opinion a little bit. But there was some, you know, conservative Milwaukee talk radio hosts who, you know, really thought that George Zimmerman was, you know, trying to wannabe cop, acting like Clint Eastwood with what he did. So we'll see what happens with there. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I think with the trial starting, you know, what to expect. You know, I think they prepared during even jury selection, they were prepared for huge crowds, which didn't show up. But now that the trial's underway, you know, will we see large crowds? I mean, and certainly once the verdict comes down, which could be several weeks away, potential for riots and other things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the George Zimmerman case. And again, one that we'll be talking about a lot here over the next few weeks or month. So again, open line today, 646-716-8739 is a phone number. If you're listening live and you'd like to call in, talk about George Zimmerman case, talk about anything. Again, it's today's opportunity for anything you'd like to talk about. The next topic I had, and this is a short one, was something that I teased several weeks back, and I didn't end up with time on the show to go into. And this was, you know, I've got some more news here to go through this week, but I wanted to throw this topic in there. We talk about liberals and these anti-gun folks that a lot of times people use interchangeably, liberals with anti-gun, which isn't always the case. There are a lot of liberals who are not anti-gun. I think the difference between a liberal who is pro-gun is a different kind of liberal, in my opinion. A liberal who is pro-gun, I think, is more of a libertarian, but just doesn't have the economics education to really understand the efficacy, how well the free market works, understand that whole angle. And for that reason, and here's why I say that, because if you're pro-gun, you believe, and when I say pro-gun, you support law-abiding citizens having guns. You believe in the power of the individual. And when you hold that core belief in the power of the individual and you trust an individual with, one, their own self-defense, but just, two, the power to protect themselves, I think that says a lot about your belief as a person in other people. And for that reason, when I hear of a liberal pro-gun, I honestly think to myself the only difference between them and them really embracing, and I'll call it libertarianism, is economic education. And I'm not going to say ignorance, but just education. I mean, there's, you know, there's doctors and brain surgeons and rocket scientists who just don't understand economics. Looks like we've got a call on here. We've got a call on 608, so we probably got someone from mid-state. So we're gonna take this call in a minute here, and then we'll finish on the liberals. Well, I'll jump through the liberals don't hate guns topic here, and then we'll take this caller. But, you know, liberals, if you have a pro-gun liberal, I would argue that that's probably a libertarian who just doesn't yet understand economics and the free markets. But liberals don't hate guns. Liberals, even, you know, your true anti-gun liberals, they don't actually hate guns. It's all about control, because they love guns in the hands of their bodyguards, the Secret Service, the police. I'm reminded of during Bill Clinton's inauguration, my inspiration, there was a a report. One of his advisors was standing next to him, and of course there's press there, someone made a comment to when there was a military flyover at Bill Clinton's inauguration, and just with kind of disgust for the use of military aircraft for an inauguration. And Ron Silver was the person who had said this, whispers over, and I can't remember who said it to, but he said to someone, he said, "Hey, those are our planes now." And that whole mindset, it's the same with guns. They hated the military when their political party, the liberals, were not in control of the military. They don't like guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, but they love guns in the hands of the police who take orders from them. They love guns in the hands of their security guards, their private security who takes care of them. So it's not the gun that the majority of them actually hate. It's the control. And that's when you really realize these anti-gun folks are really the most offensive type of person in terms of their beliefs, because they don't trust you. And that's the fact of it. It's not the gun, because they do like guns. They do like guns in the hands of people that take orders from them. It's people that don't take orders from them, and that would be you, that they don't like guns in the hands of. So we've got Don from Reedsburg here on the line. We're gonna take Don here on Well Armed Radio. Don, thank you for calling in. It's open line tonight. What's your topic?
Hi.
Oops, I said Don. Dan, I apologize.
That's okay. I'm getting used to carrying now, and I'm beginning to wonder what happens if I forget that I'm carrying and I walk into an establishment that has a sign on the door that says I can't. If I should be discovered, what can I be charged with?
Well, a couple of things. So first, when you, you know, it's something that obviously now a lot of us start to pay attention to. You know, you used to walk into a place, you walk in, now we walk in, we look for the little signs. First and foremost, if you're concealed carrying or open carrying, you know, that's some people, when they see a sign that says no concealed carry, they see that as an excuse to, well, if I'm open carrying, I'll just continue to carry. Other people, if they're concealed carrying and it says no concealed carry, I know that there's people who do ignore signs because they, believe. I mean, obviously no one's going to know if you're concealed carrying, and you'll often hear them say, rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. But I think the first answer to your question is, at that point, trespass law comes into play. Trespass law would say that you would have to be discovered, so they would have to see that you were carrying, and then once they saw that you were carrying, they would have to ask you to leave, and then if you did not leave, then you would be trespassing. You could make the argument, or they could make the argument, that they are posted, and all you would have to say is that you didn't see the sign, and there's no way for them to prove intent. There was no way for them to prove that you saw the sign. And again, a business to go trying to push trespass charges against a customer is unlikely, assuming that you just left once you were asked to leave. And again, it would beg the question, how would they know that you were carrying in the first place to be able to ask you to leave? But that's what comes into play there, is trespass law, and that retail establishment or business would have to decide to pursue trespass charges against you, and in doing so, usually they would have to have asked you to leave first before trespass would be applicable.
So basically it'd be the same thing as going to my in-laws and, oops, I forgot, and they'd ask me to take the thing out of the house, and it's basically the same kind of a thing. So there isn't much that's going to happen until I refuse to leave.
Precisely. And if you're concealed carrying, again, it begs the question, would you even know, or would they know that you were carrying? But yes, if they somehow did see that you were concealed carrying, you know, they could see that you were printing or something, and they said, sir, you know, we don't allow guns in here, that's where, if you refuse to leave, the trespassing would be the situation you'd find yourself in. But merely, you know, they could prove that you saw the sign. If you came in and said, yes, I did see the sign, and you willfully, and you acknowledged to them, then it's possible, I suppose, that the, you know, if they called the police and they'd say, hey, he told us he saw the sign, he willfully violated the sign, I think you're incriminating yourself by saying that you did see the sign. But that would be if I was ever in a location, someone said, sir, we don't allow carry here, my first thing would be, oh, I didn't know, and then I would leave.
Okay. Okay, well, that answers the question.
Dan.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling in. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
And we do now have, earlier in the week, I talked with Sheriff Clark, and he's on the line now. So we're going to, later in the show, we're going to get to Sheriff Clark's, the happenings from this past week. But we'll bring the sheriff on the line now. Sheriff Clark, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Nick, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, hope you had a good weekend. I know you're busy schedule. Appreciate you taking the time to call in.
Anytime. These are important issues, and there's a lot of unresolved, as your last caller was talking about, a lot of unresolved issues. This Personal Protection Act, still new in Wisconsin, and still trying to iron out some of the wrinkles. So I think this is a very valuable opportunity to take this stuff up.
Yeah, so let's just to get the listeners up to speed on the last week, the happenings of this past week. Last week on the week before on Thursday, the committee had voted to send this resolution to the full Board of Supervisors, and basically this resolution would have prohibited you from appearing in public service announcements, and then the full vote was going to take place this past Thursday. For the full Board of Supervisors, Wisconsin Carry and a bunch of other groups, because you've got wide support from groups across the country, we went out to our members and asked that they make contact with their, certainly if they're in Milwaukee County, make contact with their Board of Supervisors, their supervisor. And there was a big, strong response from people both in-state and out-of-state. And then, share with the viewers what happened on Thursday.
All right. First of all, I want to thank you, and Wisconsin Carry and others who have stepped up and made the calls, the emails, and the thing that's necessary to influence these county supervisors. Briefly, Patricia Jurczyk, a county supervisor, put forth a resolution that would, as you indicated, ban me from my voice or face appearing in any sort of crime prevention ads, because that's what my ads are. They're really to prevent people from becoming victimized by crime. And just the whole thing is, the idea of what she's trying to do is purely nonsense. I mean, the first role and the first objective of a law enforcement agency is to prevent crime, not respond to it. If you're responding to crime, then the crime already occurred, and as far as I'm concerned, it's too late. A better, a more effective and efficient way is to prevent people from being victimized by crime. So she put this thing forward. It passed last week in committee, actually 2 weeks ago, 4-3, which is razor thin, to go to the full board for a vote. And that happened on Thursday. And on Thursday, what happened was they voted, I believe it was 11-7, to send it back to committee, which was a procedural move. And basically, it was a defeat for Supervisor Pat Jurczyk because she couldn't get it through, and it was a message to her from her colleagues that she doesn't have the support. They don't think this is a wise idea. If she were smart, and that's saying a lot, she'd let this thing die back in the committee that it was in and realize people spoke up. They stepped up and said, this is crazy. He's a law enforcement executive. He's supposed to be doing this thing, advising us on ways to prevent ourselves from being victimized by crime and violence. But it's not over. So I'll sound the alarm again. I guess July 10th is coming up again in the Finance Committee for more debate and discussion. And there's a couple of supervisors that we need to target. One of them is County Supervisor Jim Luigi Schmidt. And he claims to be a supporter of the Second Amendment, but at the same time voted against me in this resolution. And I mean, it's kind of contradictory to say on one hand, yeah, I support the Second Amendment and gun rights, but then at the same time, do what he did to put this thing forward to prevent me from doing this. Now, the crazy thing about this, Nick, is that they're trying to do this under the ethics rules. So basically what they're saying is it's unethical for a law enforcement executive to advise potential victims and his constituents on ways to prevent themselves from being victimized by crime. That's how crazy this is. But, you know, you got to keep in mind that it's the Milwaukee County Board. They do some crazy things. We could defeat this thing. And really, it's about the content of the message, because I think you're well aware, I've been doing public service announcements, personal safety ads, crime prevention messages through radio for the last 5 or 6 years. I've done anti-drunk driving ads. People probably have heard on the radio anti-texting and driving, wearing your seatbelt, so on and so forth. And they've never had a problem. This has never come up in the 5 or 6 years that I've been using radio to prevent people from becoming victimized by safety hazards. So, but then now all of a sudden the content of the message switched from drunk driving and anti-texting while driving to personal defense, which is really promoting self-defense, self-preservation. These are leftists. They don't like the message. They're big government status individuals that think that people should just solely rely on the government for their protection. And that's what this is about. So it's being masqueraded as an ethics issue or a questionable expenditure of taxpayer resources. But, Nick, as you know, everything that I do and everything that any law enforcement agency in the United States does to prevent crime, like preventive patrol. If you put extra patrols in a neighborhood to prevent crime, that's spending taxpayer resources to prevent crime. So everybody knows that millions are spent on this, and the total so far spent on these ads is $19,000. When agencies spend millions, multi-millions every year to prevent crime, this is actually an efficient use of taxpayer resources. And again, it's effective because it could prevent people from being victimized in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was an angle that I thought when I was talking to people who weren't in state and weren't in Milwaukee, and a couple of them said, hey, well, what difference does this make for me, you know, because I'm not in Milwaukee. And obviously, we want to support pro-gun candidates. When I say pro-gun, pro-freedom elected officials. And my comment to them was that people are going to be watching this from not just Milwaukee and not just Southeast Wisconsin, but if we as freedom-minded gun owners don't support elected officials, duly elected officials, who support our rights, I mean, you're a man who speaks, you're a man of principle. I know that you are going to say what you say because you believe it regardless, but there's a lot of politicians who are going to stick their thumb in the air and test the winds and say, do I want to take this stand on behalf of freedom, or do I want to take the easier, the path of least resistance? And if we, and this is what I've said to our members, if we as gun owners and we as pro-freedom folks don't stand up and support, even if it's not in our districts or our people that we can vote for, there's going to be fewer politicians. They're going to see that. They're going to see that, hey, the gun folks didn't stand up for it. In this case, we did, and we're going to continue to. But we have to stand up for pro-freedom elected officials and let them know that they have our support. And it's important because this will be an example for other people that politicians like yourself, I shouldn't call you politicians, elected officials like yourself are willing to stand for freedom. And when you do, we'll stand with you.
See, and that's an important and a very outstanding insight on this thing for people who don't live in Milwaukee County. First of all, the people that surround Milwaukee County, the interest is they come into the county for something. People work in the county. They might live in an adjoining county. They know people. They have investments in the Milwaukee County. So they have a vested interest as to what goes on in terms of public safety. But for people that extend beyond that, keep this in mind. Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, is spending $14 million pushing this anti-Second Amendment and anti-gun initiative through the mayors against, they call themselves mayors against illegal guns, but I call them the mayors against the Second Amendment, throughout the country. So they're spending money in certain districts targeting elected officials who are pro-gun and pro-Second Amendment. So, you know, and they know that that's effective. So on one hand, it happens like that for the anti-gun movement. They say, "Wow, you know, this is outside influence." But then, all of a sudden, when they do it, you know, they realize that that is a First Amendment issue. Michael Bloomberg has every right to spend money anywhere he wants in this country on any issue. That's a First Amendment issue. So if there's somebody in Virginia, if there's somebody in California, if there's somebody in Texas who calls up here and says, hey, you know, we support that sheriff there and what he's doing as it relates to, like you said, freedom, choice, self-determination, self-preservation, self-defense, that's a First Amendment issue. So for the people that live outside the Milwaukee area, remember, you are exercising your First Amendment right.
And another comparison I would draw here, when people talk about, you know, of course, we realize that all these other public service announcements that you've done that have been regarding drunk driving, texting and driving, you know, if a governor or any, you know, or a mayor was to go on TV and there was a natural disaster, there was a monster storm. We saw this out east with Superstorm Sandy. If an elected official was to go when there was an emergency situation and offer people advice, they would be lauded for that. And I see that as what you did here. You saw a storm in the form of an emergency in the form of crime. I mean, that's what prompted you to put these public service announcements together. You saw this happening, and the opportunity to warn people is exactly what the public service announcements did. And I see it as no different than if a mayor or a governor had gone out during a natural disaster or an emergency and given people advice. I see it as no different.
Sure, and it's not any different. And I think the ordinary person, the average person, observer, they get that. This is really pushback, Nick, from the anti-gun movement. It's pushback from the anti-Second Amendment movement. This has nothing to do with what they say it is. It's all about we have to destroy this freedom message, this choice message, this self-preservation, self-determination, self-actualization, self-defense. We have to destroy this in this form. And that's what this whole thing is about. Now, the interesting thing, too, is every county supervisor in Milwaukee County gets a budgeted line item for a newsletter that they send out to each of their constituents every month with, and you've probably seen them. I mean, this is common, as you indicated. Everybody does this. To stay in touch with their constituents, it's glossy, you know, pictures of them ribbon cutting and all these great things that they're doing with their picture on it, paid for by the taxpayers. I, as an elected official, don't get a budgeted line item for a newsletter to keep in touch with my constituents, to give them these messages on public safety, which is my responsibility. I don't get that budgeted line item for a newsletter. So what they did with this resolution is they exempted themselves. So they said the sheriff can't keep in touch with his constituents on an issue that's germane to his constituents as it relates to public safety, but we get to do that. And in fact, Pat Jurczyk has used her newsletter to attack me. So, you know, that's the hypocrisy of this whole thing, that they've written in a caveat that, oh, this doesn't apply to us, it only applies to the sheriff, which is further proof that this is content, this is about content, and it's not about this expenditure of this very small expenditure. You know, I got a $100 million budget, $20,000 for a crime prevention message, and that's not really what it's about. It's about the content, the message. They don't like the fact that I trust law-abiding citizens. They don't like the fact that Wisconsin now has the Personal Protection Act and the Castle Doctrine, which empowers citizens. I'm for everything that I can do, Nick, to empower citizens to lead better lives, to lead safer lives. So, you know, we have to keep this thing going, and I'll sound the alarm when we get close again. And again, I'll let you and others know which supervisors we need to target to get this thing squashed and to get this thing, you know, finally killed, to pull the plug on it, if you will, and allow me to do my sworn duty to uphold the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and to protect people, to partner with them and work with them on ways that they can better protect themselves from the criminal element.
One last thing I want to touch on before I let you go, and I appreciate your time here tonight. I get frustrated, and I'm sure that you do also, but I know that you're used to it. The Journal Sentinel, you know, Pat Jurcik, and this was in, well, this was in on TV news, Pat Jurcik accused you of being responsible for a threat that was made against her from a gentleman in West Dallas. And then it turns out that it was later reported that that threat wasn't actually even a threat. But I didn't see anybody I didn't see near the coverage that her threat wasn't that she's accused someone of threatening her and it being your fault that that happened. And then it wasn't even a threat to start with. I didn't see any coverage of that, but I did see now the Journal Sentinel last week, instead of exposing that kind of I don't want to call it hypocrisy, but that hyperbole on her behalf to be kind to her about a hyperbole. But then they suddenly try to make it seem like it's this big out-of-state push that's contacting, and some of it certainly was. But I mean, then they quote people that and emails that were sent to supervisors who came from people here in Wisconsin, and it seems to me like they were trying to make this spin that this wasn't a grassroots local thing when it was. And I thought that just I hope that people realize, you know, that if you don't read the newspaper, you're misinformed, or excuse me, uninformed. If you do read the newspaper, you're misinformed. And that's really what we're seeing here.
Again, you know, the insight on this stuff is so obvious. If you remember the takeover of the Capitol, last January or February, by outside forces, outside unions were bussed into Madison to seize control of the state capitol over Act 10. I mentioned Michael Bloomberg, outside influences that are targeting areas outside of New York, which is his, you know, the area of his responsibility. And then this bogus story that you indicated by Pat Jurcik, that she had been threatened by a man from West Dallas. He sent me a copy of that letter that he sent to her when he sent it out originally. There's nothing in there to indicate a threat. She uses for self-promotion to push her bogus agenda. The local news station, Fox 6, here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, swallowed it whole, swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. They did a shoddy job of covering that thing, because there was an opportunity there to take a swipe at and smear me and blame me for a threat that didn't happen. But, you know, there's some other things that have gone on in Milwaukee County where people have stood up for themselves and have exercised their freedoms and exercised their right of choice to defend themselves. And it has worked in their favor. And, of course, that same media, the Sentinel Journal, didn't turn around and say, hey, a man in West Dallas saved a woman from a savage beating by her ex-boyfriend in a domestic violence situation. And that guy, and I talked to that gentleman, and he said, you know, when this thing was done, I thought about what you had said in your radio ad. And see, the newspaper then didn't say, man attributes what Sheriff Clark said to, you know, his response to saving this woman's life. And that was what the woman said. She said, that man who intervened saved my life. So, you know, it's just another indication. And you said it's frustrating. And, you know, I've been dealing with this for 10 years, so I'm kind of used to it. But what I will do and what I have done is I fight back. I hit back. And that's what the media in this town is not used to. Someone who stands on principle that when they're under attack, that they fight back and articulate their message well, and they do have support. Okay, I have a lot of local support for this, you know, on this issue, and you know that. But I also have reached out to the national support on this issue due to what the first ad that I did, you know, kind of went viral. It wasn't meant to, but that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And I applaud those people, and I encourage them. It doesn't matter whether you live in Milwaukee County. It doesn't matter whether you live in Wisconsin. These are issues of the First Amendment. These are issues of the Second Amendment. And the forces that I'm facing are also outside of Wisconsin. And so I need to posse up, if you will, all of the resources I have to beat back this attack on the Second Amendment, this attack on personal choice and freedom, this attack on the First Amendment, and this attack on me personally.
Well, Sheriff, I want to thank you for your time and thank you for calling in. I'm confident that over the next few months we're going to be talking again, and we look forward to having you on the show again. And in the meantime, you know, thanks for everything that you've done, and thanks for the opportunity that we can have to stand with you.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you. I want to thank your listeners. I want to thank your supporters. And the fight's not over. It never will be. But I'm very appreciative for what you're doing.
We'll be vigilant. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Have a good night. So Sheriff David Clark called in. I talked to him earlier in the week, and I'm glad that he had the chance to call in. Since we're on the topic, I have some more information regarding, and this was something I had for later in the show, but we'll get to it now because Sheriff was kind enough to call in tonight. Sheriff Clark and I have worked together for a couple years now, and when I say worked together, just on a professional level, and he's become a good friend. So we kind of recapped what happened last week. We on this show, we talked that we were going to, when I saw last Thursday that the committee passed the resolution to the full board to ban him from appearing in future public service announcements, I reached out to him right away and said, hey, is this a done deal here? I don't know county board politics too well. And he said, no, this is let's rally the troops. And that's what we did. And so I went out Monday morning with an announcement to all of our to Wisconsin Carries membership, which, you know, hits thousands and thousands of people all across the state. And we had that action item to reach out to the county board, to your supervisor if you live in Milwaukee County. And if you don't live in Milwaukee County, if you're outstate, that you have a dog, a pony in this fight, too, because if we don't support elected officials, duly elected officials who are willing to stand up for the Constitution, not some radical change to the Constitution, but just stand up for the Constitution. If we don't support Sheriff Clark, people all around the country are going to see that. And they're going to see that these pro-gun folks didn't rally behind their guy. And when I say their guy, I'm not talking about someone to go do something radical. I'm talking about just someone. This should be the baseline of just being willing. Every elected official swears an oath to uphold the Constitution. And now when one of them does it, one elected official upholds the Constitution in the form of the Second Amendment, the right to self-defense, he's attacked and treated like a radical right-wing extremist, when he's doing exactly what the oath he took says he should do. And so if we as pro-gun folks didn't step up, and in this case we did, and everybody who's listening here, if you picked up the phone, if you dropped an email, I mean, you should seriously reach out and pat yourself on the back because of what you did. That proposal was defeated at this point from what happened on Thursday. It was up for vote and it did not pass. There's some more research, and we've got some more calls coming in, so I'm going to take these, but there's some more research that I did. Sheriff Clark, with this public service announcement, each Milwaukee County supervisor has a budget. Now, for 2012, it was $5,500. For 2013, it was $7,500. And that budget is used for constituent communication. There's 18 Milwaukee County supervisors, and I don't want to get lost in the numbers here, but there's 18 Milwaukee County supervisors, and they each have a budget of 2012 for $5,500, which is $100,000 that they have to communicate with their constituents. Now, those 18 supervisors cover all of Milwaukee County. Sheriff Clark covers all of Milwaukee County. He spent $19,000 on these public service announcements to reach the people that the county board gets $100,000 to reach through their client communication budget or constituency communication budget. Now, this year, I talked to Supervisor Deanna Alexander last week, and she's a great gal. She gets it, understands freedom, understands, you know, the Second Amendment. Their budget this year was $7,500. There's 18 supervisors times $7,500. That's $135,000 that those 18 supervisors have to put together their newsletter. And there's some other things that can come out of that budget, like cell phone, you know, their cell phone for business use, subscription. So if they want to subscribe to the business journal, but the vast majority of that money is earmarked for client communication, constituent communication. And if the board who, there's 955,000 people, 955,000 people in Milwaukee County. Of those, there's about 2.4 is the average household size. So that, doing my math, that puts us at about, I think it was 300, I'm going to get my notes here, but it puts us at about 355,000 households and I have all this math jotted down, but it's going to take me a second to get to it here. So 355,000 households that Sheriff Clark would need to reach out to. So let's say Sheriff Clark wanted to run a newsletter. The cost of printing that newsletter, the cost of mailing that newsletter, just postage alone, and I'm getting to my notes here, but okay, here's the number. 2.43 people per household in Milwaukee County is the statistic. 955,205 people live in Milwaukee County. That would be 393,000 mailings, one to each household, which just in postage would be $180,000. And that's just postage. That doesn't include printing costs. That doesn't include the time to stuff envelopes and mail them. So you're talking about an expenditure of probably well over $377,000 to reach the people that he did with that public service announcement that he spent $19,000 on. Now, those public service announcements were a tremendous bargain for taxpayers compared to how other elected officials in county government and elsewhere communicate with their constituents. I mean, I get these from Jim Sensenbrenner, who's my congressional representative in Washington. He sends out a newsletter, and that's paid for with taxpayer dollars. So this communication with your constituents is not unusual. It's not unique to Sheriff Clark. And I had a couple people reach out to me this week and said, hey, I support the sheriff's message, but what I don't support is what is the taxpayer dollars for it. And that's an angle that I wanted to say here is, hey, this $19,000, if it leads to a few people taking control of their own self-defense and protecting themselves, didn't he accomplish his role as the duly elected law enforcement officer of keeping people safe? Now, that $18,000 and $19,000 he could have spent on overtime. He could have put another officer on the street for a few extra hours a day. Or he could have reached out to everybody and encouraged them to take their own self-defense seriously, which he did. And in doing so, he protected thousands of people for a very effective cost. There's people who called me and wanted to get into our concealed carry classes because of Sheriff Clark's message. And we've got another person on the phone here that's going to for our open line discussion. And Russ from Port Washington, I'm going to get to you in just a second, so hold the line. But think of how effective the sheriff's message was and how much bang for the buck he got. There's people who contacted Wisconsin Carry and got into a concealed carry class because of Sheriff Clark's message. And that was another genius thing about the sheriff's message, his public service announcement, is there's a whole lot of people. I mean, there's folks like me who know my rights and I'm going to exercise my rights. And I really don't care if the police don't know my rights because I'm going to make sure that the police know my rights. And if they don't acknowledge my rights, groups like Wisconsin Carry sue them. But there's more people who want permission from law enforcement. They look to law enforcement for permission to exercise their rights. And that was the genius thing about Sheriff Clark's public service announcements, was that it was an elected official, a law enforcement official, giving people permission they didn't need, because our Constitution, our human rights give us the permission to defend ourselves. But he took the step of being a law enforcement official, giving people permission to carry and act in their own self-defense. And that was huge, because there's so many people that would sit back and wait because they're worried that law enforcement doesn't support concealed carry. And there's a lot of law enforcement folks that don't support concealed carry. But the sheriff's message was just genius in that regard, and he really got a lot of bang for his buck. So we've got Russ from Port Washington here. Russ, thanks for holding, and welcome to Well Armed Radio.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm a huge history buff. And so
excellent.
I kind of went back into when they were talking about, oh, we got to regulate, and a lot of times they were saying, you know, we have to regulate this and regulate that, and the well-regulated militia, and they keep saying this well-regulated militia. Well, to go to the core of it, if you look at what Federalist Papers 29 said back in the day, they actually defined what a militia is, and they used the word regulated in a different definition. If you look at the definition, there's about three or four different definitions of the word regulated. Regulated not only means regulate as in law, but also regulated as in properly working and also correct and accurate. If you look at Federalist Papers 29, they defined what the militia is in that form, and that's what they meant by regulated, is that the arms that you have are in proper working order and occur and are accurate.
And this is a great point, and it's something that, you know, just like you years ago, because I don't take anything at face value. And so when I'm told something, it doesn't matter if the person who I voted for says it or the political party that I support says it, but I have to know for myself that it's true. And that was my approach to Right to Carry, is I thought, I don't ever want to be a fool. So I did the same thing that you did, and I began to research. And you can't just read the Second Amendment, which is what the anti-gun folks want to do, is they just want to read the Second Amendment, and then they want to change the meaning of words. But you don't have to do that, because you can easily, and this is where you realize that in some of these cases it's ignorance, but in some of the cases it's willful denial of the truth, because you could easily go research all the other writings. You don't have to wonder if the Second Amendment itself, what does that really mean? If you just go look at, you suggest the Federalist Papers, and then there's a plethora of other documents and writings, right, of our founding fathers that demonstrate exactly what they meant. And you know, Thomas Jefferson's quotes to think of some. And so the bigger point is that these anti-gun folks rely on people's ignorance, people's laziness, because they know that the people that get their news from Comedy Central, or the people that get their news from Jay Letterman's monologue, don't go read and don't understand, and they really, whatever they're fed is what they start to believe. And that's why, and I'm so glad that you brought this point up, because it's what our mission should be, is to say to people, hey, you don't have to take my word for it, and you don't have to take Wayne LaPierre's word for it, and you don't have to take, you know, rest in peace, you don't have to take Charlton Heston's word for it. Go read for yourself. Just do a little bit more reading on what these people supported, and it's all there.
Yeah, you have to go and you have to find the history on how it came about and why it is the way it is. Most people just don't get it. Their attention span is, you know, what was last week, and oh my God, Kim Kardashian called her kid a different name. So you have to find out where it comes from, how it came about, and the reasons for it. And, you know, I mean, it's no different than when they brought up the assault weapons ban. They just made up a term. They just made it up. And what happened was, it's like, no, you don't understand. They don't get it. It's very
clear. Well, that's the other danger here is it's the changing of the meaning of words. Because when you start to change what the meaning of well-regulated means, or when you change what the meaning of assault rifle means, now they're trying to change what's classified as an assault rifle, because in doing that, and this is another topic I had for tonight, but in doing that, it brings in, and you know, there's another story from this week, I'll just throw it out there right now. There's a gun control group that was supporting, you know, Mayor Bloomberg's Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which I'll just call Mayors Against Guns, because that's really what it is. And they were counting the Boston bomber as a gun death.
That.
So they're using that as their statistic. Now, they're trying to this use of statistics. They also sometimes include suicides to pad gun death statistics. They try to, now we talk about the meaning of words, they try to reclassify weapons as assault weapons to change, to grow the statistics. So now if something's classified as an assault weapon just because it has more than 10 rounds, all of a sudden, you're going to see the numbers of assault weapon deaths skyrocket. And then they can go on TV and say that this is a problem and look at the statistics. But what they did is they changed the meaning of a word, because assault weapon now means something that it didn't mean before. And then the statistics tell their story and look like something drastic happened, when all that really happened was a change of a definition.
Well, and they also did the same thing with Fast and Furious. They're like, oh, 90%, 90%, 90% lie. The problem is that they only reported the 90% that had serial numbers on them. If they get guns from China, if they got guns from, Israel or Taiwan or wherever they got the guns from, those guns don't have serial numbers, so they don't report them. People just don't figure it out. It's unreal to me. It's mind-boggling. So.
Well, it's frustrating. Yeah, it's frustrating, and the truth of it is, because you and I know, and it's so easy to do a little bit of research, but that's what you know, and to think about, you know, I call them dumbass swing voters, and Rush Limbaugh calls them low information voters, but I mean, really, I mean, we've got you know, a good half of the population, and I'm being generous there, but half of the population that is astonishingly uninformed, and they can, and then that, but even though you're uninformed, it doesn't suspend your emotional desire to do the right things. So that makes you very swayable. And when you see someone go on TV, and then we've got an anti-gun media who's willing to promote these myths, and that's what makes these uninformed people so easily swayed by the emotional arguments of the anti-gun folks. So, Russ, thanks for the call tonight. Go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, it's like sometimes they don't think, because like those M1s and M1 carbines from South Korea that were supposed to come over, they were supposed to come over here and sell on the private market. It was on a lend-lease program. The Obama administration blocked it, and they said, well, they're old and they may be malfunctioning, and we don't want them to get the hands of terrorists. Well, wait a minute. If that's true, then that means that the terrorists are here, and if they were here, wouldn't you want them to have guns that weren't working? You know, sometimes they just blither out this stuff, and it doesn't make sense if you just think about it for 2 seconds.
And that's the problem right there, is we've got half the population that really doesn't. So, Russ, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, and thanks for tuning in, and be well armed.
Yeah, you take care.
Have a good night. Another great call. Good calls tonight. I mean, I'm glad Sheriff Clark got the chance to call in, and I'm glad that he got to share with us his message. And that was really impactful, what he did last week, what we did together last week, I should say. The other topics that I have, so I think we covered the topic with Sheriff Clark. We're going to keep you posted, both, you know, here on this show and also on the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page, Facebook group. We'll keep any other items out, but we'll go out by email also when there's another action item, when we need to stand up. But again, I can't stress enough how powerful what you all did last week was. If you picked up the phone and called your Milwaukee County supervisor, if you don't live in Milwaukee County and you picked up the phone or you emailed, that made a difference. It made a huge difference. And what you did last week was stand up for freedom, and what you did was make a difference, and what you did was send a message to all these other people easily around Southeast Wisconsin who saw that the pro-gun folks stood up for their guy, stood up for a politician who stood up for their freedom, and it made a difference. And that will foster other politicians to do the same thing. So last week was a good week in that regard. Some of the things I had on my list for tonight was Colorado, a couple of stories out of Colorado from this past week. And again, we're still open line tonight, so if you've got a comment or a call, more than welcome to call in, subject of your choice. But in Colorado, there's two stories that I've been following for about a month here. Colorado was the only state west of, you know, I want to say New York, that went nuts with this anti-gun rush after Sandy Hook. And in that, there was a great deal of action from folks who, just to recap, Colorado passed some law in the wake of Sandy Hook, which really infringed on the rights of Second Amendment folks. And actually, my computer's now frozen up here, so we'll try to get this, because I want to read my notes to you on this topic. But give me one second here. I'm trying to multitask and it's not working very well. But Colorado was one of the states who passed legislation. The other states that did it were states on the East Coast. Sorry, I'm going to have to reload this article that I was going to read. But the other states that passed were, I think New York passed some, I think Connecticut passed some legislation, but Colorado was the only other state that passed legislation. I know why it is. My battery is about to drop me on my laptop here. So I'm going to do this. Let's run. I want to run Sheriff Clark's public service announcement for about 30 seconds here while I plug in, and we'll catch you on the other side and we'll talk about the Colorado story.
I'm Sheriff David Clark, and I want to talk to you about something personal, your safety. It's no longer a spectator sport. I need you in the game. But are you ready? With officers laid off and furloughed, simply calling 911 and waiting is no longer your best option. You can beg for mercy from a violent criminal, hide under the bed, or you can fight back. But are you prepared? Consider taking a certified safety course in handling a firearm so you can defend yourself until we get there. You have a duty to protect yourself and your family. We're partners now. Can I count on you?
This safety message brought to you by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office.
Okay, we're back, and we've got that figured out. Now I have my notes up and running here. So this story, Colorado lawmakers who supported gun control, they launched a movement in Colorado to recall. And the news from this past week, Colorado Secretary of State's office on Tuesday declared that the organizers behind a recall petition against a Colorado lawmaker who supported gun control had enough valid signatures to set up the first potential recall of a state lawmaker in Colorado history. Secretary of State said opponents of Senate President John Morse had gathered more than 10,000 valid signatures. They only needed 7,000, equaling 25% of the votes cast in the previous state Senate election. So this recall would likely occur in September, though legal challenges could drag out the process. So this story is noteworthy because Colorado was the only state outside of that East Coast, those East Coast anti-gun liberal states. Colorado was the only state that passed legislation regarding concealed carry, limiting magazine capacity and those other things. And there was some parts of that that were defeated. There was some parts of the legislation there that were defeated. They had a campus carry ban that was defeated. But this is notable because these legislators, we went through recalls here in Wisconsin, but these legislators in Colorado who passed restrictions on people's gun rights are now facing recall, and it's a grassroots recall. So that's something to watch there in Colorado and see how people who took the emotional route as far as legislators go and passed legislation in the wake of Sandy Hook, those legislators are it'll be interesting to see if they pay for it with their jobs. Colorado, despite the fact of Denver being and certainly Boulder being a pretty liberal area, Colorado in general has a lot of very pro-freedom, pro-gun folks. So when those politicians start acting against the wishes of their constituents, we see what happens here. So good luck to those recall organizers, and we'll keep you posted on what happens there in Colorado with regard to that. Second story I had from Colorado was Colorado recently chose to ban online training from being valid for the state's training mandate. So previously in Colorado, as is the case with other states, online training was acceptable to obtain your mandatory training for your concealed carry permit. However, with this new bill in Colorado, they've now banned online training from being valid. The interesting thing here is, we should be, and this is similar to what we're up against here in Wisconsin, we should be trying to make training more accessible. We should be, we see colleges, running their MBA programs online, and people getting college degrees from online, but yet now when it comes to pro-gun stuff, pro online training isn't good enough anymore for your concealed carry weapons permit. This is another example, just like Sheriff Clark's public PSAs, and I see we've got another caller on the line here, so we'll get over to him in a moment, but this is another example of how discrimination occurs against Second Amendment pro-gun gun stuff. All this opportunity for education and online resources that are embraced widely for everything else, but suddenly for a gun, that's not good enough. This story was from earlier this week where they were banning online training, but there are several other states who allow people to complete their concealed carry training courses entirely online. And it's unfortunate now that here in Colorado, they're trying to say that that's not, well, they are saying that it's not good enough anymore, and making it more difficult to get your training, despite the fact that, you know, again, you can go get your MBA online, but now you can't get your training for a concealed carry permit online. That's shameful, and it's another attack on our Second Amendment rights, and I didn't see a lot of reporting of it this week, but it's out there, and something that you should be aware of, and we should be vigilant against, because it is just another infringement on the right to carry. So we've got Bruce from Amherst on the line. Bruce has a comment here for Open Line Sunday. Bruce, how are you? Welcome to Wall Radio.
I am very well. Very well. Hello.
So what's your comment?
My question to you is what, and my question for everyone that's listening is, what is your opinion of what Tammy Baldwin, our United States Senator, is not doing for us?
Well, anybody who thought that Tammy Baldwin was going to go to D.C. and do anything for us pro-gun folks was drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. I think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we send Ron Johnson, who's been a great senator, really stood up for Second Amendment rights. You know, we talked about that a month or so ago on this show. And then we turn around and a few years later, this same state elects Tammy Baldwin. You know, I think part of it, honestly, is how weak of a candidate Tommy Thompson was, because, you know, Tammy Baldwin, you know, she says she supports, and that's another thing is, you know, I don't think anybody fell for it, but, you know, she goes around the state and says that she supports, you know, the Second Amendment, and we all know that that's not true, and I don't think there's been a single vote that she's taken so far that demonstrates any kind of support for it. But it is interesting how, you know, I marvel at, too, and I think, obviously, the presidential race, bringing people out and having that Obama machine in play, you know, helped her out here. But, you know, it is shocking that the same voters who sent a great guy like Ron Johnson to the Senate turned around and sent Tammy Baldwin, you know, not more than 2 years later.
Well, I thank you for your comments, and I would hope everyone supports the NRA.
Well, Bruce, thanks for calling in, and have a good night. Be well armed.
I certainly am. Thank you, sir.
So that was Bruce from Amherst. Appreciate Bruce's call tonight. Yeah, he does bring up an interesting point. Tammy Baldwin is certainly no fan of the right to self-defense and Second Amendment. And it's interesting that, you know, we send Ron Johnson and then turn around 2 years later and send her. And I really take that as a demonstration of how weak of a candidate Tommy Thompson was, to be honest with you. I think a stronger candidate could have defeated Tammy Baldwin easily. So we were wrapping up the topic there with Colorado. We talked about the recalls in Colorado. Those are moving forward. We talked about the Colorado law strikes down online gun training being another attack against your Second Amendment rights. We're coming up on 9:30 here in a few minutes. I usually go about an hour and a half for the show, so we'll do about another 7 minutes here and wrap this up. A couple other things that I was going to had on the list for this week. We rolled this into a previous caller, gun control group, Bloomberg's Mayors Against Illegal Guns, or Mayors Against Guns. You know, they're counting the Boston bomber as a gun death statistic. I talked about that during one of the other callers we had. Another news happening from the past week, and this is something that I like to see, and that's I love accountability. I love it when actions have consequences. And there's a Connecticut gun maker who's officially moving to South Carolina in the wake of the tighter state gun laws that were passed. In the wake of Sandy Hook school shooting, PTR Industries is expected to make a formal announcement this coming week, and a ribbon cutting will be attended by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, and this is according to the Sun News of Myrtle Beach. A company is going to, I'm going to say this name wrong, it looks like Horry County, H-O-R-R-Y, Horry County, which includes Myrtle Beach, and has already approved a resolution setting out terms of the company's move. County Council Chairman Mark Lazarus says he's excited about the development. Josh Fiorini, PTR's Chief Executive Officer, says the plant will employ 140 people, many of whom will relocate from Connecticut. The move will take place over 3 years. A company said it had been contacted by 41 states and selected South Carolina from 6 finalists. So congratulations to South Carolina on landing another company and snagging it away from Connecticut, where they decided to pass some anti-gun legislation. And again, I love to see that you know, these politicians who think that they're going to do something great by passing these gun laws turn around and end up losing out on jobs and employers because of that legislation. You know, they try to pass this feel-good legislation, and it has consequences, and now they lost a company moving to South Carolina because of it. So we'd like to see. Let's see if I have anything else here for today as we wrap up the show. Update for you on Wisconsin Carry's lawsuit against the Department of Justice. Part of our lawsuit, we filed an injunction against the Department of Justice. So not only are we going to try to have their permanent rules changed by this lawsuit, but we asked for an injunction to make that to put those permanent rules on hold while this lawsuit works its way through the court system, which could take, you know, it could take a year. I mean, it's hard to say how long this process will take, but it could take up to a year, I think, for our lawsuit against the Department of Justice to work its way through the courts. So July 8th at 2 p.m., Monday, July 8th, 2 p.m., Waukesha County Courthouse. If anybody is listening and would like to, they'll be, you know, we'll send out some more announcements about this through other social media resources. But if you're in the area and you're interested in coming on out, it would be great to see you and great to see some supporters of the Second Amendment and the supporters of Wisconsin Carry show up for this hearing July 8th, 2 p.m. at the Waukesha County Courthouse. And I'll have more details coming up on future shows. But that day is the hearing for the injunction, where a judge will decide if, while the case is being heard, we're going to put the permanent rules on hold and continue under the emergency rules in the meantime. So thanks for tuning in. Sad to say, Well Armed Radio will be off air next Sunday, so I'll see you in 2 weeks. I just have this feeling that there's going to be some major news with the Zimmerman trial this upcoming week, and I'm not going to be on the air next Sunday because I'll be on vacation in Door County. But again, Saturday afternoon, if you're up in the Peninsula State Park area and you see a boat out there in the bay with the Gadsden flag waving, that's me. And wait on out and have a drink with me. That wraps it up for tonight. Thanks for tuning in to Well Armed Radio. Be well armed.